Hey everyone, this is John.
This is Wes.
And this is Ryan.
And this is the Super Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. And like the name implies, we're going to talk about Super Nintendo games as they came out sort of semi-chronologically 21 years ago. So we're up to December of 1995. We got a couple of good ones to talk about here to dig deep on. Donkey Kong Country 2, as well as Breath of Fire 2. So let's just go ahead and get things kicked off with Donkey Kong Country 2. And I do need to start with a correction here. For months now, I've been saying that Donkey Kong Country 2 came out in December. And it did not. This one actually came out...
November 20th. November 20th.
Yes.
Huh, wow.
I compiled this
list. Egg on your face. Why do we let you run this?
Eat some crow with a nice dessert of humble pie. Yeah. I made this list like 3 or 4 years ago when we first started really ramping up these Super Nintendo shows, and I was clearly operating on wrong information and never bothered to do any further research until the games actually came up. So it's my fault. But this game was indeed released on November 20th, 1995 in North America. Directed by Tim Stamper, produced by Greg Malaise, music of course by David Wise, who does a lot of really great video game music. We're not going to spend too much time on the people behind this.
Is it Malaise or Malus?
It's M-A-Y-L-E-S. Malaise, maybe. Oh, Greg, if you're listening, tell us how to spell your name.
Cesare's dead.
Yeah. I'm sorry, that was insensitive. How'd he die?
Oh, no, he's still alive. Oh, hey, and he's from Leicester, England. They won the big soccer thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, did they?
I know a lot about soccer.
is there a soccer thing going on?
Well, yeah, they were like, and betting odds, they were like 50,000 to 1 or some insane amount like that.
So somebody who bet a dollar.
It would be like if a really good minor league baseball team won the World Series.
Which is very, very technically impossible. But,
yeah. Because they do this thing where like the worst MLB team would become a farm league team, and then the best farm league team would become a major league team.
Interesting.
And yeah, so you get relegated or promoted based on how well you play. So this was a team that was in the this Leicester team was shitty, and then they became good, and then they won the whole thing.
We might as well take the sports tangent. It's
probably, or it'd be like, I don't know, who's like the Astros? The Astros are terrible, right?
Astros were terrible for a long time. They've gotten better.
Okay, it would be like if the Astros from 3 years ago.
Okay.
Won the World Series.
All right, well, nice. Well,
without being allowed to have a shortstop. if that makes sense. I don't know what's comparative.
The idea of like relegating to a lower league is really interesting for me in professional sports because it ensures that you do not tank. Because
that's a really good point.
If you tank, if you intentionally try to field a bad team, then guess what? You're not going to be part of this professional this higher level league anymore. Sure. I don't know how that would work specifically in Major League Baseball because
I think you'd have to disassociate the teams. You'd have to make it so that you don't have a farm league team. You simply have your roster and then some. Maybe you expand your own roster and then there's other teams that are allowed to compete. The minor leagues would then become a lot more interesting.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, that would really...
NFL can happen because college football is essentially minor league football.
Right, yeah, those are the farm teams in a sense. But it'd be really tough at this point to separate out how roster construction is done in Major League Baseball because you have your 40-man roster, but only 25 players actually are allowed to take the field, so to speak. And so many of those other players are relegated to minor league systems who are, of course, affiliates of the major league system. So, you know, you have part of your roster not actually available to you. And so they're getting their work in minor league systems. Anyway, Super Nintendo.
Yes.
These are also games. Donkey Kong Country 2. And my first note here on my page is this game is hard as balls.
Yeah.
And the difficulty is probably something we're going to be addressing as we continue forward in this game. I don't really have too much history about this game.
Yeah.
It did come out almost a year to the date, if I'm getting my dates correct in my brain here, although that hasn't worked out so far in this podcast. But almost a year after Donkey Kong Country. So yeah. Donkey Kong Country does gangbusters for Nintendo. I think it's like the third best-selling Super Nintendo game.
Well, this is apparently the sixth best-selling, the sequel.
Yeah. Yeah, it did very well for them this whole series, and they cranked one out again really quickly because this was an era, the NES and the Super Nintendo, where games are getting pumped out in 8 months, 12 months, so much smaller teams and faster turnaround for all their games. But it shares a lot in common with Donkey Kong Country. It's got the same visual style, reuses a lot of assets, But
one of the main characters makes an appearance again. Yeah, plays identical to his old version, essentially.
You do have a new character in Dixie Kong.
Yeah.
And I don't know, what did you think of not having DK to play as in this game?
Well, I always felt like you had them in two sort of roles. You had the lumbering Hulk of Donkey Kong, who could break down bad guys, who had his ground pound, had his role just... I don't know. When I played the game, I liked being Donkey Kong, no matter the scenario. I rarely would ever feel like I wanted to be Diddy.
Mm-hmm.
So then they got rid of Diddy and replaced him with... Is it
Dixie?
Dixie. And Dixie is even more like Diddy than like Donkey.
Yeah.
And that she has her tail thing, which helps you slow fall, which is not really a mechanic that I'm that thrilled about in the first place. Like, I don't know. I feel like there was this, they were drastically different in the same way that Hagar and Cody are really different.
Mm-hmm.
And this game, they gave you two Codys. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's not bad. I mean, it's cool. It's fun that this character is here. It just makes me long for having three. It would have been nice to have Donkey Kong, Dixie, and Diddy.
Right.
But, hey, that's my take.
You? Well, you know, in Donkey Kong Country 3, you'll get another big lumbering character back.
Yeah.
And
and I would say also that in this version, I would rather be playing as her, as the Dixie character, rather than Diddy.
Yeah, you do get that extra insurance of that propeller, but I don't know, there doesn't really seem to be a huge advantage to playing as Diddy, because he's not the bigger, more powerful character.
He's a little faster, and he has a better attack with that little wheel kick thing he does. Also, there's a little glitch in the game where you can actually go into hazardous things right on the edge of the wheel and still be able to jump out of it, so you do have a little bit of that brief little invulnerability kind of move thing that he can do.
I don't know, but
Dixie's
it doesn't
a little slower.
It doesn't seem significant. It does, like the extra speed that you get as Diddy doesn't really seem significant.
And granted, we're only maybe halfway through the game, if that.
About 2/3, because we have been beating our head up against the same levels for a couple of months now.
If you guys ever want to watch something to make you feel absolutely horrible about your life, watch this speed run.
No,
someone beat in 40 some minutes.
I will not.
That's not bad at all.
That's
impressive.
Scary, but it was awesome watching this.
So we're lumbering through this game, one or two levels at a time.
And we're like, and I think that the original Donkey Kong game is, one, difficult in a very fluid sense. It ramps up in difficulty. Mm-hmm. It gets harder at the end. The puzzles are challenging, but not infuriating, and not just like, again, beat your head against the wall difficult.
Right.
And granted, I played that game dozens, probably hundreds of hours when I was a kid. So I remember all the nuances and little details and clever tricks where things are hidden, stuff like that. And in this one, I mean, we've just been playing it back and forth. And we've been playing hours of it, but it's brutally difficult at times. It reminds me of going from, say, like the original, if you have your Mario All-Stars cartridge. It's like going from the original Mario game to Lost Levels.
Mm-hmm.
It is a really, really massive increase in difficulty.
And it doesn't do anything just downright unfair, I think, like Invisible Wind that will blow you off an edge.
True.
Like Lost Levels, but it does ramp up so quickly. And it actually, when you first start the game, it seems like it's going to be a little bit friendlier because it does have like these more obvious banana trails that will lead you to secrets and collectibles and stuff. And it'll keep track of your collectibles and stuff. So that, you know, if you're going for the 100% completion, you know what levels you have to backtrack to.
Well, also one of our biggest obstacles is now that they've included this currency, this scarcity of being able to save.
Yeah.
Where in the past it was like, you just get Candy Kong and you're good till you get to the next. You either beat this world or you get to the next Candy Kong.
Right.
And you're safe again. And in this one, it's sort of like you have to beat it, but then you also have to collect hidden coins. And once you can only save at each save spot once, and from then on it costs coins.
Right.
So if you don't have the coins and you beat a bunch of levels and you have one life left, your back's against the wall. You're kind of fucked if you don't make it through to the next one.
And a lot of
collect those coins.
And a lot of things we're saying about the difficulty in the economy, like all of this would be alleviated and it'd just be a footnote if it just saved after every level.
Yeah.
Like we are nearing the end of this generation and they're still doing things that are very last gen. You know, and I think we mentioned it very briefly before in a couple of different shows, the Game Boy version of Donkey Kong Land saves after every level, and that's running on inferior technology to the NES. So I'm not exactly sure what the holdup here was. I don't know what the advantage is to not having you save after every level. Like, why is that a design choice?
It's probably just a difficulty thing. They just thought, you know, let's just add this little gimmick to a thing. Let's give them reasons for collecting these coins. Opposed to some games that are like, here's all these collectibles, and the only reason we're collecting them is say, hey, I collected all these things. Like,
you think about the makers of this game, it's Rare, and they went on to make Donkey Kong 64 and Banjo-Kazooie and Banjo-Tooie. These games where your only objective is just go out and collect tons of shit.
Yeah.
They have no shame about doing this later on. I just don't know, like, I'm anxious to see what they do in Donkey Kong Country 3. Like, why was this a design choice? Like, especially after a boss fight.
Mm-hmm.
You fight a boss, then you have to play another level, and if you're low on lives... If you're low on lives and you have to beat the next level with the ghost ropes, for example, in order to even get to a save point, then you're kicked all the way back to before that boss fight, if you game over.
Well, it's also annoying because you have to go to the museum or whatever it's called, and he's going to give you hints, but you don't want to buy the hints because you're using the thing that you need to save the game with.
Yeah.
So it's like you wouldn't even seek the information unless you were just flooded with lives and flooded with coins. You're not going to waste time asking questions about anything.
You're not really going to need the hints at that point, because if you're that good, then why do you...
True. Good point. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of just unnecessary. And yeah, I mean, you're saying that the game gives you the bananas to make you do what you're supposed to do. And I guess technically it does that, but the maps are long. They're really long. They're very difficult. And they're constantly just throwing shit at you.
Yeah.
All the time. And also, think of how little time you actually spend getting to be these characters. And that's maybe one of the bigger differences. I feel like in the original one, you had to find the cool. To make the maps easier, you found the guys in the boxes. Like, you found the rhinos and you rushed through stations.
Sure.
Or, you know, you found the shark and then your swordfish and then all the water levels are infinitely easier. And this one, it forces you to use a lot of mechanics that keep you away from being the character themselves. You have to...
There's that entire bee boss fight. You have to be Squawks the Parrot.
Yeah. Like, maybe I don't want to spend this much time playing around with some wonky mechanic. Like, the minecart mission, and this was a fucking awful minecart mission. That's really rough. And I like how we realized you didn't even have to win the race.
Yeah.
So it forces you to race super fast just to be dangerous and thinking that you need to win when it's not apparent that that's necessary.
Right.
So...
I think that's them being kind. Like, all right, this is kind of tough. Let's just make it so. They just gotta go through it.
You think it started out with, okay, now you have to beat these nine guys. You have to do everything perfectly to get through it. That's how they originally designed that one.
God.
I personally,
the 11-year-old playtesters had, like, post-traumatic stress disorder. They're just like, all right, let's do this.
I personally like the minecart levels. I mean, I liked it a lot more once I found out I didn't have to come in first. But I like those sort of like auto track, get your timing down exactly correctly. I was just beating my head against a Mario Maker level for 20 minutes.
You guys got into the level, it's a minecart, but you have to like hit the right barrels to open the gates.
Yeah,
yeah, like that was really fun. That was clever, but you know.
It's a take or an evolution on the stop-go level in Donkey Kong Country where, like, you hit the green light and it freezes the invulnerable enemies and then you have a certain amount of time before you get to the next one.
And that's a steady ramp-up, too. Mm-hmm. Like, right, like, you can skip certain ones early on, but then there comes a time where it's, like, you need to hit them perfect in synchronization so you can get through the last part. But that's just, like, 10% of the map is that hard. This one, it feels like it's an entire map of... fuck you mechanic.
Oh, and like, and the one where the water is rising and you have to
That one's particularly rough. Yeah, I mean, I don't get why they gotta be that way.
I think the toughest one is the one where the parrot is carrying you through like the walls of thorns.
Oh, yes. Sure.
There's a harder version of that later on in the game. I watched that speedrun. Like, it's that.
Looking forward to it.
It's that, but it's a fucking maze. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, I don't know how he knew to go which way he did. Like, it was just gibberish.
Oh, in the barrel thing? Yeah, like, they do this, the same thing where you're stuck in barrels sometimes. So it's sort of like, you basically have to do the one right thing or shoot yourself into death.
Yeah. Rocking yourself into a wall of spikes. Yeah, it's great.
God, way to make... What an unenjoyable experience. I mean, granted, look, I am enjoying this game. I think it's great. I think it's brutally difficult.
I think we're going to feel better about it, though, once we actually start using that code to give us 50 lives at the beginning.
True.
Because I found one.
Yeah.
So
here's the other thing. Like, we didn't have this game as a kid. I mean, I didn't have this game as a kid. I feel like if I clocked 100 hours playing this game, I would have eventually beaten it, and then these missions wouldn't seem so tough. Like, they would at least be familiar territory. But yeah, it's not that way.
I also think that... Oh, shoot, I totally lost my train of thought. Stand by.
Oh, you wanted to use the cheats.
I will say this. I will say this. I am proud that as a kid, I did beat this game. Yeah. I will put that on a fucking resume if I need to. That is just an accomplishment, because this game is brutal.
I do think, I remember what I was going to say. I do think that, just based on judging by the level designs and stuff, that this game presumes that you have played the first one.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that this game was, like, you think about, like every Mario game, they start out by saying, okay, this is somebody's first Mario game, so we have to build it.
And we have to kidnap the princess. Except just in case you haven't seen the other ones, you need to experience the princess kidnapping.
Except the version where you got to jump on the eggs and throw it back at them and shoot eggs at you.
Right. And except in Mario 3D World, no princess was kidnapped in that one. You actually play as Peach.
And why do we have a water gun?
I don't think she was kidnapped till the end of that one, actually.
Which is very random. It's like, oh shit, I knew we forgot something.
Yeah. Like, oh god. And they did that in like Super Mario 3 as well. Peach is not kidnapped in Super Mario 3 until the very end. It's like, oh, that's right. We meant to kidnap her.
We needed to give a reason to do this. What was his motivation this entire time? Mm-hmm. I was bored on.
But I think that... I don't think there's anything wrong with thinking that... designing a game as if they had played the previous one. But, you know... Unless we had really spent a lot of time getting used to the rhythm of Donkey Kong Country before we started this one up, you know, we're still going to end up in the situation where we're always running low on lives.
First people did. It's fucking Donkey Kong. Come
on. And maybe the game also assumes that you are playing for extended sessions from the beginning.
That's the thing. I bet if you or I sat down, instead of swapping a controller back and forth... If we just sat there and clocked a couple hours playing them, we would probably be beating these stages more efficiently. Because it would just be one of us doing the same thing over and over again.
You have a chance to build some momentum.
Like that, like the one Mario Maker level you were just playing in there. If we were to swap back and forth, you would be... Neither of us would be any closer to beating it.
Right.
We would both be way further behind because we were slowly figuring it out for ourselves and we never just got to churn 8 lives.
Didn't get the muscle memory.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. I mean...
So, I mean, as everyone's probably able to tell from listening, we haven't beaten it yet. We have gotten to World 5, but then it kicked us back to before the boss of World 4, so I don't have to play that again.
Great. What's the boss of World 4?
The bee.
Oh, God.
The fucking bee.
Ryan, you're up.
The bee's not so bad. I mean, well, it's difficult and it's easy to die on, but I think once you get the...
It wasn't hard to recognize the pattern.
Yeah. Once you realize you just got to get under it and shoot it, and it's going to go faster, but you're still faster than it. Mm-hmm. Then it's not that tough. It's just, you know, you have 5 lives. And again, if we had 50 lives, we would be in a lot better shape. But because you have this scarcity of lives, and you got to beat these other stages just to get to it, it sucks.
Yeah. But there are only 6 worlds, so, you know, we're getting close. There's a 7th world, but it's one stage and then the final boss. So that's not a good deal.
It's merciful.
Right. I think that it's stunning to think that we still have one more of these coming out. And within the next year, they, you know, but they only made like one proper Mario title for the Super Nintendo. Mm-hmm. Like for some reason, they just never thought to revisit the Mario World
formula. Kind of crazy if you think about it.
Yeah.
How the success of the series and how it was their launch title. I don't know why they wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Like that game was.
You got Mario World and the next one was 5 years later, Mario 64.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you'd get Yoshi's Island, which is a take on the Mario franchise, but it's not really the same sort of platform.
Yeah, you're not getting that same fix.
And we've talked about that one before.
How do you think this franchise, this game, has grown since, like, the last one, what, was Donkey Kong Country Returns?
Tropical Freeze.
No, it was Tropical Freeze.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they had the Bongo game, and then he was in Mario Kart, and then he was in Brawl, then he was in like every other, he's probably in a Kirby game.
It got, after 64, which was a 3D platforming collectathon, it got a little experimental on the GameCube with Jungle Beat with the Bongos, and then Donkey Kongo, which was just a music rhythm game. Then you don't see it again until Returns, which is 2010. On the Wii.
Which did not take you very long to beat that one.
No, but, I mean, again, it wasn't a game that I was bashing my head against the wall. It was much more merciful and saved after every goddamn level. Mm-hmm. Tropical Freeze was, I would say, probably almost as hard as this. That one took me a while to get through. But, like, I don't think Returns did much to add to the formula. It was just more of a modernization. And Tropical Freeze is as a follow-up to that. I mean, Tropical Freeze does add like more of a traditional co-op experience, and actually Returns might have done it as well, but now memory escapes me.
Yeah, look at this timeline. Holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
That's an 11-year gap.
Yeah, between 64 and Returns.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not counting Jungle Beat in there. Well, I guess it's just the Donkey Kong Country franchise.
I can hardly count that as a game by itself.
Fuck you, Jungle Beat is cool.
Do they use the bongos for any other games?
Donkey Konga and Donkey Kong. I think you can use the bongos to play some games, but really? I don't think any other games are designed specifically around the bongos.
I want to play Dark Souls with the bongo drums.
No, I want to play.
Oh, there's a guy that was playing a first-person shooter with a Guitar Hero guitar.
Nice. Yep, that was great. Someone did that with Dark Souls, too. They beat it with a Guitar Hero guitar.
Oh, God. That's crazy.
Like Devil May Cry with the bongos.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, I mean, I think this game still looks and especially sounds really great. It's got a great soundtrack. Mm-hmm. I don't think it holds up quite as well as some sprite-based stuff. But, you know, this has a much more stylized visual. So you guys got to take that as it is. And
it's not, well, it's not, I don't want to say it's muddy, but it's not crisp. It's just kind of everything resonates. Like, light seems to resonate in the game so much that it looks gorgeous, but it's also...
And
difficult to see what you're looking at sometimes.
And the contrast isn't great as long as we're criticizing it. There are times where like you're in a swamp level and it's hard to judge what is safe to jump on.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that also, you know, the contrast isn't great. It is a little bit dark at times. And actually some of these things we're talking about does get fixed in the GBA version because it was re-released for the Game Boy Advance a few years later. But, you know, they're certainly not going for realism here. And I think that like when it came out, we were probably thinking to ourselves, at least I was like, wow, it looks so realistic and awesome. This is great. And I don't think like, that realism was their intention. It's not the visual style they wanted. But like I mentioned, it does get re-released for the GBA. That made some changes. You can save anywhere, which is great. What an amazing change that they made.
Nice.
And, you know, in the game, in Country 2, you're not able to exit a world and revisit a previous level until you find Funky Kong, and then of course you have to fucking pay him. So if you want to go back to World 1 and stock up on some coins or lives, you can't until you've gotten a decent amount into the current world you're in.
Mm-hmm.
They changed that in the GBA version. You are able to, once you meet Funky, you can travel anywhere.
They give him the same song?
Yeah, well, yeah. Once you meet him once.
Oh, yeah.
This game is also available on the Wii and Wii U Virtual Console. So for the used cart on Amazon, it starts about $25, so not too bad.
That's not bad.
Yeah, you can also get it for the the GBA. You can get a cartridge used for about $8, also not bad.
Hmm.
I think that
it's funny how some of the top selling games hold their value better than any of the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
but I think probably the Wii U Virtual Console is the way to go with this game because you do get the off TV play, so you get the smaller screen if you so choose, and you get the save states is really what it is. So you get to play on your TV if you want, and then you just save it anywhere, including like right in the middle of a boss fight if you're doing well, and then everything goes to shit.
True.
Oh, a brand new cartridge. Last I checked a few days ago, $175.
Yep.
$175 for a brand new copy of Donkey Kong Country 2 in the box. So, yeah.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's collector's edition, John.
No, there was no collector's edition of Donkey Kong Country 2.
Oh, God damn it, John.
What, they don't have like a Game of the Year edition? Or... really? There's no DLC? I'm upset.
That was the GBA version.
Oh, I want character skins.
Candy Kong? Get a Candy Kong skin?
Ooh, yeah.
All right. Let's take a quick break before we come back with Breath of Fire 2. Breath of Fire 2 is up next. This one was released on December 10th, 1995, published and developed both by Capcom. Square Enix was not involved in the localization of this one. We talked before about Breath of Fire 1
mm-hmm.
several shows back, probably a year and a half ago. And Capcom was the first RPG Capcom ever made. Square Enix helped them with localizing and publishing it in North America. So this time they did not go to Square Enix to help them with that process. And actually, the localization turned out, I think, a little bit better than in Breath of Fire 1. Because my biggest complaint about the localization in Breath of Fire 1 wasn't like the translation of text and narrative based off. It was just your inventory management. Things were abbreviated with three or four letters, and it was impossible to tell what these things were supposed to be. Like, is it a helmet? Is it a sword? I can't tell the difference.
Yeah.
This one, it's much better. It's pretty clear.
So you can't tell the difference between an abbreviation for the word helmet and an abbreviation for the word sword.
Not in Breath of Fire 1, you can't.
That seems very odd.
Yeah.
It's like trying to pick your Pokemon in Pokemon Red and Blue.
Just based on, like, the icon?
When you rename them.
Oh, okay.
Because everything has, like, that.
It's either
that
a bug monster, or, like, yeah, a little...
This game, like, the localization turned out a lot better. There are some people who don't like how the story was translated or localized. I haven't been paying attention. I can't speak to that. But this game was produced by Tokuro Fujiwara, who is a fucking rock star at Capcom. We talked about him a lot when we talked about Final Fantasy VII. No, not Final Fantasy VII, sorry. Mega Man.
Final Fantasy VIII.
Mega Man.
Good Capcom, one, John.
When
Come
Capcom
on.
Took over the series.
Mega Man 7. And this guy, just briefly, is the mastermind behind a whole lot of Capcom series back then. Mega Man, Final Fight, Breath of Fire, a lot of the Disney stuff. You name a Capcom game that they made prior to the N64, and this guy was probably involved in some capacity.
Bionic Commando?
Bionic Commando.
Resident Evil, no shit.
Mm-hmm. But, again, no Square Enix this time. Capcom did all the work themselves. The battles are turn-taking, and they use a four-person party, and they are also random, so this is very much a standard RPG setup for the time.
Wait, the parties were random?
No, the battles were random.
Okay, that would be very odd.
That would be. That would be very, very strange.
Huh, that'd be a fun mechanic.
Six mages.
The encounter rate does get quite high in dungeons, which can be irritating at times. I've been abusing save states in a lot of the dungeons just...
So but they have max repels, right?
No, there are no max repels. Indeed, they do not. And the battles, you know, might as well spend a few minutes on them. They're not all that strategic either. I use auto battle a lot, especially when I know that I can just spam the attack button and win the battle, like when I know I'm over leveled for the particular area. So it is nice when the battles, I'm able to end them quickly and not have to input all these commands. But like, I even find like myself in dungeons and in battles that I'm not quite ready to auto battle with yet. I'm just spamming the attack button. Mm-hmm. I mean, characters, you do get a ton of characters. You were looking at that character art earlier with all those different ones. You get a ton of characters and they're like, a lot of variety.
What's the weirdo game that you were playing with?
Shin Megami Tensei.
Yeah. This seems to have some a kindred spirit here. Like, this thing is so demonic and then it's got like six dicks with mouths. Is that what that's supposed to be?
Yeah.
Like an exposed rib cage, and it's...
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That's exactly...
It's horrible.
How did they get by the censors at
it's
the
like
time?
It's like a big pig face? What the fuck?
It looks like Ganon with an exposed rib cage, and yeah. Six dicks with mouths and teeth.
Yeah, jeez.
That's exactly... And they're ribbed, in case anyone is wondering.
You're normally worried about the teeth on the dick. This is a dick with teeth. So...
Yeah.
This is bad.
A little disturbing. But, like, the character models, you were pointing them out earlier.
No, these are pretty cool. Like, I mean, look at this one. This one is supposed to be some sort of, like, forest spirit woman that has spawned, like,
a pig nose.
Terrified-looking grape thing. What is this supposed to be?
It's a grape with a pig's face.
Yeah.
And lips. Mm-hmm. Big old lips.
I mean, who's going to win this fight? I mean, the fucking dog with a crossbow? Or this hovering monster that clearly has control of
me? Yeah, so I do want to spend a little bit of time on the actual characters. So, you know, you have your main character summons dragons in battle, which is a really... It pretty much uses up all his MP, but it's a really great way to rack up a ton of damage. You have your dog with a crossbow.
An original name for a Capcom series, too, calling him...
Ryu, the main character? Yeah,
yeah, you know,
of course.
You got Clever.
You got a frog who uses a sword. You got a big...
frog using a sword. This came out after...
Chrono Trigger, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was probably in development before Chrono Trigger was released.
There's only so many animals and there's only so many weapons.
I mean, he's a little bigger. Wait, would you and be he's happy fat with... compared to Frog? I mean,
what if he had a Glock? What if he had a handgun?
That would be more acceptable to me. But no, Frog with a sword was blatant ripoff.
I didn't know.
Even looks like him. I mean, come on.
I didn't know you were so attached and defensive of the character Frog. I mean, it's
fucking Frog, dude.
You want to know the real kicker? This Frog is French.
Oh my god. This is an insult, man. I knew
that would piss you off. But no. You know, you got your cat girl. You got your girl with wings. Your girl with wings is, and then a lot of these characters are staples of the Breath of Fire series. Girl with wings uses magic. Your main character summons dragons. Cat girl is very speedy. Your dog character shoots people with projectiles. You also have this monkey that joins up on your team. But like a lot of like their skills in battle are not very useful. Like you don't harness enough MP. You don't wield enough MP throughout the game to make using magic every turn a viable option.
We're just gonna gloss over the horse with the tiny head.
There's a horse with a tiny head. Yes.
I mean, come on, that's just the weirdest thing.
A very muscular horse with a tiny head. He that guy has tons of HP, but very little defense. Weirdly enough.
So he's like Chansey.
Yeah, I suppose.
If all of these are, which ones are these? If I'm playing Pokemon, who is who? Tell me who is who.
Oh my god.
Okay. Well, I mean, your main character is more like a starter Pokemon. It can deal out a lot of damage. It's balanced. Your wing girl character, she's like your stereotypical psychic type. She's speedy and can hit with magic. She's your mage. Mm-hmm. So like she's an Alakazam. Cat girl hits with a decent amount of offense and is fast. Doesn't hit very hard though. Maybe like a
you want to keep it as a cat,
the starter like a normal
Persian or a Leopard or yeah, something
maybe
like that.
Like your, like maybe like your starter normal, sure. Your dog character, I'm not sure what he excels at. He just kind of hits at range and hangs back. He uses some restorative magic, which is nice. Frog character is the same way. They're just kind of space fillers. If the horse is your Chansey. The monkey, I guess, is another like starter normal one. So you're not getting a whole lot of character variety because you're not using their skills all that much.
By the way, I count battle. 8 total. Do you ever get 8-on-8 battle? Or like no. 8 player battles? Or is it 4?
It's 4.
Just cap out at 4?
It's always going to be 4, and then you have to switch out your party members. And they'll all level up individually. So if you want to level everyone up evenly, you're going to have to trade them out. Except your main character, you can never trade him out. He's stuck in there. At least to the point of the game I've played.
This monkey looks like a tool.
He is a bit of a tool. But, I mean, the most useful thing for mixing up your party is that there are some world traversal mechanics going on. So, like, the monkey, he'll allow you to cross certain gaps because, like, there'll be two cliffs and a river going in between and, like, a vertical peg coming out of one and a vertical peg on the other side. And he's able to reach across and grapple your whole party to the other side. The frog is another useful one because he actually, when you have him first in your party, you can actually transform into a hopping frog rather than more of a anthropomorphic frog, and he allows you to travel the world faster and allows you to get over certain obstacles like lakes faster.
Is this the actual like world map?
Yeah, that's the world map right there.
So you start here, I guess, and you go all the way around?
Yeah, so far that's been my general traversal. I think like this southern area, like the southeastern area is a place I haven't accessed yet, so maybe that's the end game stuff. But, I mean, you don't progress constantly. There is a rhythm to the game where it's having you go back to your starting area. Because back in your starting area, near the town where you first begin the game, there's this narrative conceit where you start the character with your main character and your dog buddy. And your dog buddy gets accused of a crime he didn't do. He has to go into hiding. And you eventually get him back into your party once you clear his name. There's this narrative arc that's going on there. And the area that he's hiding out is like, just like this little shack.
It's like he's the one that chewed on the couch.
Exactly. Right. And he actually builds this town for you while he's not in your party. And what you can do is you can go around in the world and recruit people, essentially, to move into your town. And they'll do things like open up shops. And that's really the only useful thing that I've found for them so far. They just kind of go in there and live. And what those shops will do is allow you to get advanced gear that you couldn't access otherwise. So, yeah, that's a great picture.
Some really inappropriate thing. Come on, get a life.
So there's this, it's constantly sending you back to that area. And you can do some other things in that area. Like, you pulled up the picture of the five ladies before. And those five ladies are like these, I figure they're calling them, like, they're these sage characters that you meet throughout the game. And what you can do is you can, like, fuse their power with one of your characters. Mm-hmm. And that will power them up in some way. I haven't seen the tangible effects of it quite yet, but I've only found two of them. So we'll see what happens as I get further into the game.
I gotta say, some of these, like, character design, like, boss designs and bad guy designs are incredible. Mm-hmm. Like, that is, like, some of these are really, really awesome.
Yeah, I haven't fought that one yet. He's a little demon, like, poking out of the ground. He's great looking.
Just, like, rock monster looking dude. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, some really cool sprite design for sure. And that, like, Capcom's really good at that sort of thing, like, getting the most out of the sprites in this system. Mm-hmm. But I want to get back to the battles really quick. Like, you don't use those skills in battle, but I talked about the world exploration, that being your main objective or your main reason to changing out your party members and keeping certain people in your party.
I mean, you don't want them to lag behind.
Right, because they might be useful to you for actually moving throughout the world.
But it sounds like there's not a lot that diversifies them. You say you don't use their skills much, you auto-battle a lot.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, like, a lot of people praise this game for its narrative arc, but the gameplay hasn't hooked me. Because a lot of the battles are just playing out the same as the ones before, and I find myself just wanting to avoid battles completely or get through them as quickly as possible in order just to reach the next area.
There's a problem, John. You're not the gamer that enjoys the narrative arc. You're the gamer that enjoys the game.
That's right, John. You do hate art.
Mechanicals and stuff.
We've established you hate art.
Art in all its forms.
I'm sure this kind of game I would enjoy because I like a good story and everything like that.
You like the story, but not the actual game. Yeah, we're like polar
opposites.
I like
the game too. I want both.
I think it's impossible to like both.
But
I think you're wrong.
I think you need to go fuck yourself.
And you're living your life entirely wrong. But anyway, I mean, there are some better things in this game. Like, the inventory management is better. The battles move faster. It looks better. It can be grindy at times. I am using a guide because it's not always explicit to where you're supposed to go next, especially when it's having you backtrack to previous areas. It's not always clear what you're supposed to be doing, or like when you're supposed to talk to this one character in order to have things progress. So I'm using this guide to help point me in the right direction. And there are sections of the game that require like 20, 30 minutes of grinding, which can be annoying, especially since the battles are not very
fun.
That's annoying. And then the experience is distributed oddly. So a battle will end, and it'll say, hey, you've gained 1,000 experience. But in fact, your characters have only individually gained like 250. Hmm. So the fewer characters you have in your party, the more experience you're actually getting, which I guess from just like this design conceit makes sense. Like, you're doing all the work.
So you could roll in with 3 characters as opposed to 4, and you would get 333 as opposed to 250.
Yeah.
That's not...
Why don't you just run through the game solo and just have one super character?
You know, in fact, I think you probably could. Like, if you just rolled through with your main character, like, once he's able to summon his dragons, if you just essentially summoned your dragon, used an MP restore, and summoned your dragon again, I've two-hit killed bosses that way.
Who's the Snake Woman?
I've not gotten her yet.
Like, there's these 8 characters that I always see, and then this one's included in this.
She might be a side character that you can recruit, but is not integral to the narrative of the game. Those are Final Fantasy IX characters.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Good stuff.
It's pretty cool, though.
What a great game.
That character design is so much better.
Well,
no, it's not false. These are obviously cooler.
Yeah, come on.
If we're going to fight about it, I do like the Final Fantasy IX characters better, but
I like the classic Black Mage look, though. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool.
But I also like the game better, so I might be biased.
For crying out loud, my phone is Final Fantasy themed, 9 theme right now.
Oh,
I mean, come
that's
on,
a great picture of Vivi.
I like it. It's cool. It's all like shadowy and stuff. Mm-hmm.
But I think that...
I need to play through that game again. That's so fucking good.
Yeah.
I think that this game, of course, would be a lot better if the battles were better. But the upside of all this is that it's not very strenuous because of off-TV play. Because I can just drop it down on the gamepad and watch something else while I'm trudging my way through these battles that are not very interesting. It makes
it's a sign of a great game. Can you do other things?
Exactly.
It sounds like this is homework. Like, oh, I gotta log in and make sure I get through this area tonight. Like, it makes the game sound like homework.
Mm-hmm. It feels a lot like work. I am hopeful that if I get some new characters, it will change the landscape of the battle. If it does, I'll let you know.
I mean, that's how I got in with Hearthstone lately. It's like, oh, I gotta log in and get done with my daily quest. Because it's just kind of got into that point where it's like, all right.
I mean, if I wanted to do that, I'd play Animal Crossing. If I wanted a chore. So, I mean, save states, like I mentioned before, do make it easier to get through because you're not always looking for your save points because you have to save at specific areas around the open world, typical RPG stuff. There's a lot of side stuff you can do if you want, like building that town or recruiting townspeople I mentioned before. Some of the dungeons do have like these puzzle elements, like step on switches in a certain order to open different doors to reveal different treasure, which is kind of cool. This game is certainly not perfect. It feels more realized than Breath of Fire 1. It feels like they had a more specific vision for what they wanted to do with this game, which would make sense because Breath of Fire 1 was their first RPG. And now they've in Breath of Fire 2, they've made this bog standard kind of sort of middle of the road RPG. So, this game must have done well enough for them because they went on to make two more sequels.
What part of the game do they run into Matthew McConaughey where he's chewing on a 3-year-old cigar and carries around an axe?
Haven't gotten to it yet. I'll let you know.
Okay, you let me know.
Maybe he's hanging around with that snake
lady. Yeah, at what part in the game do they give her pants? Because you can clearly see her vagina.
I think they might have remade this game. I wonder if those pictures are from the remake or if that's just fan-created CG.
No, there's enough fan art that tells you what's going on here. My God.
My goodness. There's some Breath of Fire fans who are really into it.
Yeah, there. I mean, they may need help.
Should we look for some Breath of Fire slash fiction?
Oh my God. Leave it to Ryan. He'll find it. This is
bam.
I'm sure it'll take one Google search. So, like Donkey Kong Country 2, this game was also re-released on the GBA. They did, in the GBA version, they introduced a dash button, which is great, allow you to move through some of these environments faster. And this one is also on the Wii and the Wii U Virtual Console. It is the Super Nintendo version on the Wii U Virtual Console, not the GBA version. It feels weird that I have to make that distinction, but there it is. You can get a used copy of Breath of Fire 2 for $60.
Wow, that's a lot of money.
On Super Nintendo, yeah. You can get a brand new copy of Breath of Fire 2 for $600.
Oof, I know what I'm getting. I don't know. Christmas is a while away.
Yeah, you got lots of time to save up for it.
Yeah, that's true.
And the GBA version, you can get for $20 used, or $110 new, the GBA. Or you can just get it for $8 on the Wii Virtual Console. That's the way to go.
Mm-hmm. Or you can just do a Google image search of Breath of Fire 2.
Yeah, and you get just, all you need from this game.
Just look at all this cat vagina. Oh man, it's out there.
All right. Oh, you guys got any of the Super Nintendo games you want to talk about?
I do not. No, nothing on tap here. Wes?
No, I'm good.
Yeah. No.
Oh, we got some time to kill. You were running through Super Mario World?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, actually. So I was a little disappointed. I booted up my cartridge having not played it in probably a year, I guess. And I know I had a, was it 98, 96 star? Basically,
I think it might be 96.
96 star, and you've beaten everything, but basically you just got to, you know, close out Bowser, and that's it.
Right.
And it was gone. It was entirely gone. And I was like, all my save states were gone.
I wonder if your battery's dying.
I don't know. I mean, maybe that's the case. Hmm. Could be. But at any rate, so I started it back up, just test it out.
Can you just replace those batteries? Just unscrew it and...
Oh.
I don't know how easy it is. I know you can do it and people do it themselves. So it's not...
Yeah.
You know, it's not brain surgery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was just figured I'd start it up and try it again. And it's great because I didn't realize just how thoroughly I knew all of the secret exits and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I probably got about 70% done.
Nice.
And I haven't even touched Bowser or Star Road yet. So, just like, I know certain areas, I pretty much, the map by memory, I've totally cleaned out. Mm-hmm. Like the forest and the first three. Well, like the, yeah, there's like the world restart, which is really easy because there are no real secret exits.
Right.
I don't think. Second one's got a lot of secret stuff you need to get to, but pretty much got all of that. Went into the ocean, like the little lake they have there. Found the secret exits out of there to the tunnel to the star. Of course, the secret spot. Go into the cave. I beat through the cave.
Actually, Vanilla Dome. And
the first time through, like when I was just playing through and beating stuff, I was kind of just taking every tangent that I remembered and was needed. And one of the ones that I went down was actually skipping the third dungeon in the cave and just taking the upper bridge.
Yeah, taking the, not Cheese Bridge, but the other bridge.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So went over there. Went into the forest. I mean, I've just been playing it through everywhere. And I like the weirdest one, that I actually did have to look up because I simply just couldn't remember the tactic was on Chocolate Island, I think it's called.
Chocolate Island's where I get a little lost, too.
There's one stage where I thought it was killing all of the enemies.
I know what
you're talking about. It was either collecting all of the coins, and I was like, oh, it's just a timer thing. You have like 35 seconds to get through the first two tunnels.
Oh,
or first two pipes.
Because I always thought it had something to do with like collecting coins or beating enemies as well, but timing, that's...
Well, it cycles through a bunch of different stages, so doing that will net you other... Like, that will change to totally different ones, but if you want the secret exit, the real secret exit, you just have to play it super fast.
And that one just, like, gets you that loop, right? Like, it doesn't really unlock another level. It's just like, hey, now you can go around this circle.
Yeah. It's one of those cheesy mechanics that I guess they thought would be funny and didn't really explain. Mm. But yeah, like, even getting through Star Road and, like, how easy it is to get the Blue Yoshi. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
And how early you can get it, too, because it's one of the first Star Road maps you can get to.
And clearly the superior Yoshi.
Yeah.
You're not even close. Totally.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do about that.
No.
So yeah, it's been really fun playing through, and I mean, hopefully it could be the sort of thing where I get to like 90 and I'm like, what the fuck am I missing? But I feel like I got a pretty good handle on it. I'm gonna keep going with this. It's a lot of fun.
Nice. All right, I think that's gonna bring the show to a close. Mm-hmm. Next up is the official show, and it probably won't be a super long show. It'll probably be as long as this one. But anyway, I've got some news to talk about. Probably the main attraction. And we're going to start it off with the Pokemon show again.
Yeah, that'll be good. Whose time is it? Whose turn is it to host?
I think it's mine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll go back and listen to the previous show.
I did the last one.
All right. Till next time, everybody.
So long.
Later.